and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today for another wonderful conversation that really will help to inspire you, enlighten you, empower you, because this show is all about that. It's giving you the knowledge so you can make informed decisions regarding your health and well-being. And as always, I'm so glad you're able to join me for this conversation today. And if you would like to get the archive shows, whether it's the show I do every Thursday here on Progressive Radio Network at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and in addition to that, would like to listen to my Love Code show, which is every Saturday at 11 a.m. on Progressive Radio Network, that's Eastern Time, you can either go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because I archive all my shows and post them there, or you can go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Silman, and just opt in there to my newsletter, and I can send those archive shows to you every week. So you will be guaranteed to be able to listen to both of these programs, which are really there for you to inspire and uplift and transform your life. And I'm going to just jump right in because we have a great conversation with my guest who's coming to us all the way from Melbourne, Australia. And we're going to be talking about, should you be on a statin if your cholesterol is elevated, with Vinita Dahiya. Now, cholesterol, we hear that term and it's like we freak out and what does it mean and my LDL is like this and should I get on a statin? And I know that so many people are encouraged by their doctors to go on statins, sometimes forcefully to go on statins. What is this topic all about? What is cholesterol about? What is really affecting our heart? What do we need to know so we can make an informed decision? And the best person to help us do that is Vinita. So let me just share a little bit about Vinita Dahiya. She is an internationally recognized integrative medicine expert and author. Her career has been guided by balancing body chemistries and mental health and chronic complex health conditions. Vinita is in the vanguard of neurochemistry research, which has led to the publication of Alchemy of the Mind and Alchemy of Amino Acid books with online master classes. She has earned her board-certified fellowship in anti-aging and regenerative medicine and has qualifications in pharmacy, naturopathy, nutritional mental health, and Ayurvedic medicine in Australia and abroad. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Vinita to the show today. So hello and g'day, Vinita.
Hello, Dr. Silman. This is amazing. This is great. I'm so excited to talk about the old achy breaky heart.
You know, I think we should also let my audience in on the fact that we have been friends for decades, actually, Vinita.
We go sure way have. Back
because I've lived in Australia. I'm actually in Australia right now as we're speaking. So it's great to reconnect with you, Vinita. But we've done so much over the, I mean, literally decades. You know, we've done workshops together. You've promoted things. I've learned from you. We've just, you know, you're such an inspiration in my life. And you really are one of those wise women that I go to learn from and just to have great conversations. So we inspire each other. And it's just wonderful to be able to have you on the show today.
And it's wonderful that the community now are embracing integrative medicine when we were involved in integrative medicine many, many decades ago. So it's great that we learn from each other.
And we continue to learn. It never ends, right? Never ending.
It never ends. There's always new research about, and we need to keep updated with it all the time. And often doctors don't do that. They will only listen to what Big Pharma tells them. So we need to, as integrative practitioners, we're constantly upskilling ourselves. So it's really good.
Yeah, and no, we have to stay educated and aware and on the leading edge, because that is really where the answers are to support our ongoing health and rejuvenation. And that's why we're having this conversation about cholesterol, because, you know, it's been marketed to for so many years now, and, you know, whole industry has been created around it, from diet to, you know, drugs like statin drugs to, you know, just the level of marketing is overwhelming for people. So there's so much misinformation and fear. So can we start with, you know, where would you like to start? Just defining what this cholesterol story is all about?
Well, I think the whole issue of cardiovascular disease is a very big issue. It's probably the leading cause of death worldwide. In Australia, one Australian dies every 12 minutes of a heart attack or cardiovascular associated condition. But in the USA, one U.S. citizen dies every 36 seconds from a cardiovascular death.
Wow.
That's actually accounting one in four deaths is associated with cardiovascular issues. So we cannot ignore the importance of cardiovascular issues. But the issue here lies is all cardiovascular events associated with a high cholesterol? That is the question that we need to ask, because often you can go into a doctor's and get a high level of LDL, just slightly marginally high, and the doctor would automatically put you on a statin because they've been taught that statins are ideal for a patient who has a high LDL and protective against cardiovascular events. But the problem here, I think it's very important to note that, you know, there was an article in the Journal of American College of Cardiology. It's called, in 2015, they did a Mises study. They actually took 5,000 people, and they followed them for about 10 years. And 77% of these people, they fitted the trial, the actual criteria for a statin use, because the cholesterol was high. But half of those people had a zero coronary calcium score. Now, I'll explain what that means. But those that had a low calcium score had zero chance of having a heart attack. So in other words, if you've got those people do not need statins. If you've got a coronary calcium score that's over 400, for example, that's serious, that's when you actually need to use a statin. So statins should not be used haphazardly. And we need to know what is ideal to test. LDL is not good enough because cholesterol is very important for our body. Cholesterol is the precursor to all our sex hormones. So where do we get our testosterone, our progesterone, estrogen? They all come from cholesterol. So we can't drive that too low, but we also can't have the balance of all those cholesterol molecules out of balance. So that's the important thing. That's where we actually differentiate between dyslipidemia and hypercholesterolemia. Hypercholesterolemia means that there's too much of cholesterol, right? Typically, you will see in a familial hypercholesterolemia, in other words, cholesterol that's so high throughout the genetic cycle, those are the people that would actually have a high LDL, low HDL, that's typical, but you'll see triglycerides pretty neutral. In the case of dyslipidemia...
I would like you to define these terms before we go any further, because
we need to understand
these terms LDL and HDL.
Yeah.
You ask somebody, well, what does that mean? People don't know what they just know it's bad. It's something bad. So can you help us to define it first so we can, you know, have a better understanding of the terminology, which is never really explained by our medical practitioners to us, and then, you know, what we need to be aware of when we are concerned about cholesterol and we're looking at this blood work that we get back from the doctors, and when doctors are talking to us, we need the education to evaluate what they're telling us. So let's start with that. So cholesterol is a precursor molecule from which all of our hormones are made. All of them. So it's critical for brain function too. Correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your hormones are involved, your sex hormones are involved in fertility, in libido, in muscle tone, in bone density. So you do need your sex hormones to function, and they come from cholesterol. So when you go to a doctor and get your cholesterol measured, your doctor will measure the total cholesterol. Then they'll measure HDL, which actually stands for high-density lipoproteins. Then they'll measure LDL, which stands for low-density lipoproteins, and they'll measure triglycerides. Now, very importantly, we need to establish, if they see a high level of LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, they will recommend...
Why is that considered bad? Why do we say that's bad? Is it true?
Okay.
I mean, is that a bad thing to say that it's bad?
Yes, if it's in excessive amounts, it can be bad. Now, all your LDLs, lipoproteins, low-density lipoproteins, all the lipoproteins are in actual fat molecules. What they have, the actual lipoprotein molecule is made up, it's a complex particle that's made up of a hydrophobic, in other words, a fat-loving core, and then it's got the lipid profiling on the outside of it. So your hydrophobic core is surrounded by water-loving membrane, which is the hydrophilic membrane, and that consists of phospholipids. Now, if we don't have enough phospholipids, we will start, our brain starts to starve. In other words, phospholipids are necessary to make acetylcholine in the brain. Phospholipids are necessary to ensure that you are able to remember and focus, etc. So we need those phospholipids for our memory, concentration, focus, and attention. Now, beyond that lipoprotein, we also have apolipoproteins. These are molecules that actually stick on the outside of those lipoproteins. So when you talk about LDL, HDL, etc., we can further identify the size of those lipoproteins, which will then differentiate them from either being pro-atherogenic. Now, that means that they cause atherogenesis, hardening of the arteries. These are your LDLs, your IDLs, VLDL. VLDL stands for very low-density lipoproteins. The ones that are anti-atherogenic, in other words, they are protective to the heart, are called HDL. Now, LDLs, it's not good enough to measure LDL on its own. And the reason being is that all of the LDL is not bad. There are 7 subfractions. Now, a general GP will not measure all the subfractions, so you'll have to go to an integrative practitioner or a doctor who knows that they can actually identify all the various subfractions of LDL. The reason being is that 2 of those subfractions are less atherogenic. That's because you have a high LDL does not mean you need a statin. If you have high levels of the atherogenic, in other words, the ones that actually cause thickening of the arteries, the foam cells build up, the blood cannot flow through, hardening of these arteries, that is when you actually would need some form of therapy that would actually start to break down that atherogenesis. That's the differentiation between just measuring LDL with the normal GP versus measuring LDL subfractions. So subfractions are very, very important. Yes.
So this is a big problem because if the traditional testing only is looking at this LDL. So LDL is like a generic term. It's like, you know, I'm buying a car. You know, cars aren't bad or good. Then, if you want to break it down, is it a car that is functioning properly? Is it a new car? That's where you have to get more specific with these small, dense LDLs or these oxidized LDLs. This is where you need a more specific type of test. We've got to dig deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Can people ask this from your GPs and your doctors? Yes, you can.
You can absolutely do so. You can ask your doctor, particularly if you have, let's say you've got a family member who has had a cardiovascular event, heart attack, angina, myocardial infarction, whatever it may be. You want to examine your genetic propensity for that particular condition. So you want to see whether you are a candidate for a cardiovascular event. So you might be super active, you might be an athlete, etc. You might be even on an oral contraceptive pill, or you might have DVT, a young person or going on a flight overseas, coming back and having a heart attack. Is that associated with an LDL subtraction issue? Does that mean that their cholesterol was high? Or was there a genetic predisposition? So we can actually look at gene markers, which are not traditionally used today. So the gene markers that can be identified are factor V laden, antithrombin. These are your genetic components that can actually identify exactly whether you have the propensity for your cardiovascular events. There's so many gene markers, apolipoproteins, your factor V laden, antithrombin, proteinase, and MTHFR. If we have a genetic defect like methylation, that will affect homocysteine. So you could be a young 20-year-old.
But wait, because I think we need to define these things before we go further. So there are genomic tests that are available, but they're not from a traditional medical doctor. They would have to be from an integrative practitioner like myself, which you actually look at the genomics of these predispositions that would need to be evaluated to see if you have the tendency, not necessarily inevitability, and therefore can make the necessary lifestyle and dietary changes. So that there's some test out there that looks at genomics. Mm-hmm. But I don't really want to go there right now, Anita, because that gets a little confusing for people. We can give them some links. But I want to stay back. Yeah. I want to just continue with defining things. You talked about a calcium score early on. Are we talking about a test that shows whether calcium is accumulating in your arteries and there's calcification occurring? Is that what that score means for people?
Calcium is very, very important. Calcium scores, a coronary calcium score, is a specific marker that identifies whether you have a predisposition towards a heart attack, whether you need to have a statin or not. Okay? So essentially, if your calcium score, you might have a high cholesterol and your calcium score is zero. These are patients that do not need statins. But if you have
what does calcium mean? What are we looking at with that calcium score?
This is a calculated score that identifies coronary calcium function. In other words, heart calcium function. Remember, calcium is needed for your bones, your hair, your skin, and your nails. But your parathyroid hormone comes around and it leaches the calcium out of the bone so that we get enough calcium in the bloodstream. The calcium in the bloodstream is needed for the heart to function. And that's what we want to identify. It's a coronary calcium score. So when you are a potential cardiovascular patient, ask your doctor for your coronary calcium score as well as your LDL subtractions. Now, if you have a patient, for example, who or a mother or father that may have had a heart attack, have a look at those gene markers. One of the gene markers that is so important is lipoprotein A. Have you heard of lipoprotein A?
Yes, I have, but okay. No one else has, I'm sure, listening.
Yeah. So lipoprotein A is very simple. It's just one marker that will tell you whether you have a, it's made in the liver, it enters the bloodstream, and it accumulates on the inner side of the arteries. And they, what they do is they promote inflammation. But it is a very, very definitive marker. It's lipoprotein A would be elevated in familial hypercholesterolemia. Familial means that it is in the cardiovascular events running, heart attacks run in the family. So if you see a totally normal cholesterol level, but your lipoprotein A is elevated, that's when you would know that you'd want to have the rest of the family checked out as well, because that it runs in the family. You have to change the dietary components, the lifestyle components, the exercise components for that particular patient.
Okay, that's great. Good information. Because that's why we're having this conversation. There's so many, you know, specifics that we are not educated about. So I want to ask you a question. What are the risks associated with statins? Let's talk a little bit about the statin issue, because it's given out, to be honest, like candy to everybody. It's considered essential, it's considered safe. Doctors never question it. I just know so many people who've been encouraged to take statins. But we need to understand, if we're going to go that way, which we will talk about whether there are other options, put it that way, there are other options. Let's be honest and talk about what are some of the risks associated with statins.
Look, statins are amazing for people who actually need it. There are short-acting ones, there are longer-acting ones, such as simvastatin and rosuvastatin and atorvastatin. So it's handed out like candies. You are correct there. The problem with all of these statins, they work on a particular enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase, and they are inhibitors of that particular enzyme. It works at lowering LDL, but they are equally natural supplementation that can actually work on the same enzyme without the side effects. Now, the side effects of statins is a big issue, and this is why lots of people do not stay with their statin dose throughout their life, and you do not need to actually use statins throughout your life. So statins, when they are given, most people would have the problem with muscle aches, myalgias, arthralgias. They suddenly develop arthritis, or they have muscle aches and pains, or they develop dyspepsia. So it's not unusual to see somebody who is on a statin saying, oh, my aches and pains, are they on a painkiller? Then they go and take some paracetamol. Paracetamol is another one. Acetaminophen has been used, like handed out like candies. And then they develop dyspepsia, so the doctor would then put them onto a PPI, proton pump inhibitor. So can you see that one application of one medication can lead to a whole polypharmacy event for a particular patient? But there are other agents that can be used pharmaceutically, like sequestrants, for example, bile acid sequestrants. Have you heard of cholestyramine?
No, but I want to, before I go there, I just have to say, I want to share an experience why I have concerns about statins, where things just a little bizarre when you really understand statins. So statins go in, they deplete CoQ10 in the body. They also weaken your muscles, which is why you get muscle pains. You don't just get muscle pains, you get weakened muscles, which the heart happens to be a muscle. So that's an interesting thing right there to consider. But I remember that both my parents were put on statins. When my dad was put on a statin, he used to ride his bicycle every morning. When he was on a statin, he no longer had the strength in his legs to ride his bicycle. And he was in his, you know, 70s, maybe early 70s at that point. And then, you know, they wanted my 85-year, I mean, she struggled. I had battles with her doctors for many years over statins. They said, well, you know, she's had TIAs or whatever, they want her on statins. My mother had, you know, had issues with her heart. She had poor muscle strength. And we have to also say that cholesterol is necessary for brain function, as you said earlier. And when you lower cholesterol, you could be at greater risk of dementia, as well as weakened heart muscles and weakened other muscles in the body. In fact, I've had a guest who had major dementia occur with the use of statins. So I think it was many years ago, he was a guest, and he actually was a military doctor, and he kept having these episodes of dementia. And isn't there cancer associated with the long-term use of statins as well?
Well, the big pharma has, I don't know of a specific study that indicates the association of statins and cancer, but there has been a lot of publications out there published on the value of statins in numerous other disease states. But at the same time, it also, we know that the literature clearly shows that it causes elevated liver transaminases. So it buggers up the liver, you know, and cholesterol in itself is damaging. Excess cholesterol is damaging to the liver. Now you're giving a patient a statin which drives down all those very nutrients that your body needs to produce energy. And this is why people become so tired. Coenzyme Q10, vitamin B group vitamins, your methylating cofactors like folate, B6 and B12. These are so essential when you're taking something like a statin. But they're very good alternatives to statins as well.
So, you know, when you hear all this, you go, well, why the heck would I ever want to be on a statin? It's going to cause more problems. I have to tell you, I had a friend who was talked into taking a statin just recently. And all of a sudden, one night in his sleep, he just had this incredible urge. He ran to the toilet. He said it was like explosive diarrhea. For hours, he was on the toilet. And, you know, it terrified him. He didn't know if the colon was falling out. It was so intense. And when, you know, we looked at the side effects, guess what? That's a side effect.
Yes.
I mean, it's scary. But the important message, and, you know, you really talk about this, is that we have to understand what is really compromising the health of our circulatory system, which isn't just the heart, it's how the blood is flowing through the body, and what it is that is really being required. Why are we at this risk? 1 in 12 in Australians and 1 every, 30-something seconds of getting heart attacks in the U.S.? Let's talk about that, Denise, because that's the big story. That's what we really need to
the
get
biggest
people to understand.
The biggest story is sugar. 70% of our cardiovascular diseases is directly related to insulin resistance. 70% of Australians are now either overweight or they're obese. A lot of the males have cardiovascular issues. Look, food is so freely available now. All our celebrations are based around food. We are exposing ourselves to so many different, moving away from our ethnic food and exposing ourselves to so many processed versions. And the other thing is sitting is the new smoking. All of us are sitting, watching our devices and sitting in front of computers. So what we're doing, how we're insulting our bodies, is playing a direct role in cholesterol and cardiovascular events. We have a really great cardiologist, integrative cardiologist here in Australia, Dr. Ross Walker, and he's written a book called Five Stages to Health. And it's very simple. They've done many studies proving that just sticking to five simple principles, you are able to alleviate the propensity for cardiovascular events. And that's essentially, it's sugar. Take the damn sugar out of the body. Because although we're exposing ourselves to, you know, we are experiencing, we think that fat causes cardiovascular disease. There was a couple of decades that everybody went on to fat-free foods, when in actual fact, we know that the trans fats and the omega-6 inflammatory oils can contribute towards fat deposition, but it's not the fat that causes cardiovascular events. It's this explosion of sugar. Sugar increases, your insulin resistance increases the propensity for cardiovascular events. So our diet plays such a vital role. We need to
and
stick
when
to...
we say sugar, I mean, we also need to say sugar isn't just the white stuff. It's the refined carbohydrates. It's the cakes. It's the breads. These are the sugars that we're getting in our diet. Many people don't recognize they turn into sugar in our body.
Absolutely. And we also need to, so we could say, well, I'm eating healthily and why have I still got a cardiovascular event? These are people that might be super, super stressed. And so a good Mediterranean diet, as an example, would be a good option. But not only the Mediterranean diet with lots of good oils and protein and vegetables and fresh fruits, etc., but we need that Mediterranean lifestyle. And all of us are super, super stressed. So we need to actually make sure that we're eating our main meal at lunchtime and then having a relax later during the day. And we also, the other thing is, we're exposing ourselves to so many anti-nutrients. We, you know, there's some people that smoke all day or drink all day and they, you know, they have too much grog or they snort cocaine or they have addictions. All of these anti-nutrients are actually damaging to the system. And because we sit all day, we don't exercise. Or we might do a pulse hour exercise, you know, doing a walk once a week or a gym session once a week. That's not good enough. So exercise plays such a vital role to keep that blood flowing, to keep the endorphins going. And the other thing, too, is sleep. If you ask anybody if they're actually having their 8 hours of sleep a day, very few people will actually say yes. Sleep is so restorative. It's so reparative to the body. If we are lacking sleep, we're not able to restore those mechanisms by which your cardiovascular system will repair itself. And of course, what's the cherry on the cake is the stress. Stress plays such a vital role in cardiovascular events. It's crazy. Stress
Why is that, Anita?
Do you know, sometimes if you're not looking stressed, you're not doing your job well. So everybody's going out getting very, very stressed. But what stress does is stress is basically an adrenal hormone, which is involved in the hormone cascade. So if stress is elevated, it stimulates the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And it sends signals to the brain and it says, look, the body's under stress, please react to it. And your brain then recognizes it and stimulates the release of adrenaline. And so we have this adrenaline rush. This is why you have your heart palpitating, you have tachycardias and arrhythmias. That changes the pressure of the blood that goes into the heart, and cortisol is the precursor to aldosterone. And so guess what? This changes your renin-angiotensin system, it changes your blood pressure, and then you start to develop blood pressure issues. Then the brain says, wait a minute, I've reacted to that stress, and now my brain is starved. So it's looking for a fuel source. It's looking for sugar. Very quick fuel source is sugar. How does it get it? It gets it from a process called gluconeogenesis. It breaks down the muscle tissue in the liver and it feeds the brain the sugar. So your muscles become weak. Now your brain says, I'm still starving because my body is under constant stress. So you go out and find the easiest and the quickest form of fuel source, which is a lolly, a cake, a sugar fix. And this then changes that sympathetic tone in your body. You then start, I'm stressed, my tummy is in a knot, I have to have an explosive stool, or I'm palpitating, or I'm sweating. What damage that does to the heart is horrendous. Day to day, you will find that it starts to thicken. Your platelets start to thicken. The foam cells within the arterioles thicken. And that then causes slowing. Over time, the blood slows to the heart. It really flows really slowly because the tube is now blocked. So the heart now has to work much harder at pumping the system. And this then impacts on cholesterol, it impacts on sex hormones, it impacts on every organ system. So stress plays a vital role. Managing stress is so important in cardiovascular events.
And this is where the exercise comes in. This is where meditation comes in. These are strategies that are actually essential for us to have lives that are filled with vitality, energy, maintaining all our systems. They're not kind of extraneous hobbies. These are really essential lifestyle fundamentals, I would call them.
Yeah. And it's really just a matter of touching base. People only start to realize what's wrong in their day-to-day activities when they've had they've had a heart attack or a stroke, or a close family member has experienced this. Then they suddenly realize, well, what is happening to my body? Have those drugs been effective for me, and are they the right drugs? Which way can we change? Nutrients play such a vital role in regulating cholesterol management, driving down that bad cholesterol, which is the LDL cholesterol, and raising your LDLs. There's a trifecta that we see in the labs all the time. Typically, you will see a high LDL, a high VLDL, you'll see a low HDL, and you'll see a high triglyceride. That combination tells you automatically, don't worry about looking at cholesterol only. You've got to get the dysglycemia down. In other words, get the sugar levels under control. And you can measure that through a simple test that your doctor can do, HbA1c. It measures your pre-diabetic marker. If that is elevated, then yes, go and have a look at your fasting glucose, your fasting insulin, have a look at a glucose tolerance test, and start regulating that sugar intake in the diet. And there's some beautiful natural therapies that help you do that.
Oh, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. What are some of those natural therapies that you recommend?
Well, in terms of sugar, there's simple things like chromium, vanadium, gemnema, cinnamon, just a cup of cinnamon tea every day. All of those factors will play a role in regulating your sugar. But most importantly, from a cholesterol point of view, we've got to ensure that the diet is correct. From a nutrient perspective, we know that statins will deplete coenzyme Q10. Now, CoQ10, there's various versions of it. Ubiquinol is the active form of CoQ10. It's very powerful antioxidants. So you'll find ubiquinol in various forms, ibedinones and et cetera. Get the activated form of it so that it acts as an antioxidant. It actually mitigates your vascular inflammation and oxidative stress. It preserves that endothelial function, and it preserves the integrity of the vascular system. So by doing that, coenzyme Q10 not only helps the vasculature of the cardiovascular system, but it improves your ATP production, which is your energy production. It also improves insulin sensitivity. So coenzyme Q10 is absolutely my first line therapy for any cardiovascular event. Another very, very important nutrient is the good oils. These are your essential fatty acids. Many studies have been used to identify specific essential fatty acids. I'm not talking about your trans fats and your things that are fried and your corn syrups, etc. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about omega oils. These are omega-3 oils, krill oil, your tocopherols. Your vitamin E comes in various isoforms. So taking on board all those tocotrienols, the various forms of vitamin E, they have been shown in the literature to reduce lipoprotein A by 17%. And can reduce LDL by 24%. These are tocotrienols. They're really effective. Then there's a newer version of them called SBMs. They are specialized pro-resolving mediators. These are actually lipid mediators that promote resolution, reduce pain. They encourage the clearance of bad bugs like your pathogens, and so they are used very effectively for a cardiovascular patient as well. So they can be classed as your good oils. Then there's a whole bunch of really good antioxidants, glutathione, chromium, your bioflavonoids. There's one that really needs mention, and that's called bergamot. Have you heard of bergamot?
I haven't. Is that from the herb, the bergamot plant?
That's right.
Right.
Now there's huge amount. You can Google bergamot in cardiovascular disease, and there's a huge plethora of some really good studies showing that bergamot actually reduces LDL and triglycerides. It helps glucose enters the cell, and it increases the blood circulation and the vascular health. So bergamot actually contains your polyphenols. It contains a number of active components that inhibit the cholesterol biosynthesis. So bergamot is one. There's a number of really good studies with bergamot. Now, using a combination of bergamot, your coenzyme Q10, magnesium, acetyl-L-carnitine, these are very, very effective. Now, there's been a meta-analysis being done by Wang and his team. They looked at probiotics. They looked at Lactobacillus acidophilus, Bifidobacterium lactis, Lactobacillus plantarum, and they had shown that cholesterol was reduced, and it also managed diabetes mellitus as well. So that means that probiotics improving the diversity of the microbiota in the gut can play a positive role in lowering your cholesterol and supporting sugar. So there's some really good studies out there and some good literature out there that is showing some really great opportunities for us to consider when we're identifying a cardiovascular event. And if there's a predisposition to an elevation of cholesterol, you can use natural things very, very effectively to actually help that. Alpha-lipoic acid is an antioxidant. It works against sugar as well. It works with neuropathies, and it helps with cardiovascular events. So if you're looking at a statin is in actual fact HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors. So what are the natural versions of statins? We can use tocotrienols, we could use red yeast rice, we could use pantothenoic acid, which is vitamin B5. So they are natural agents that act like statins. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, this is the good news. The big picture is that the choices we have made in our culture, the diets we eat, the stress levels we create, the poor nutritional status, the conditions that alter our gut microbiome. We have to add the exposure to chemicals in the environment, including non-particulate matter. I once went to a lecture and looking at studies done on all of the minute particles that we can't even see that come out of exhaust engines of cars and buses, how they are damaging our arteries. And then we have the impact of the Wi-Fi, which, I have looked into how the EMS and the Wi-Fi world are contributing to inflammation. we have created an environment.
Huge.
And especially the choices we make that
toxic
have created an epidemic. And then we're using the pharmaceutical drugs that have been prescribed to us. I would say we have been brainwashed into believing they're the solution, but actually are further contributing to this dysfunction within our bodies. Crazy, huh?
It's further compounding. It's crazy. Even heavy metals there's been a number of studies showing that heavy metals play such a vital role in cardiovascular events. One study was done by Menke and his team in the Circulation Journal, and they found that lead on its own, let alone mercury and cadmium, etc., lead increased cardiovascular events by 55%. Lead toxicity in these patients increased myocardial infarction by 89%. So, besides EMF, besides all these toxicants and pollutants that we're putting into our body, heavy metals, we definitely need to clean up our act in terms of our diet, our lifestyle, exercise. There is a beautiful a cardiovascular assessment questionnaire that I have that I would give to patients just to get a brief overview of what's going on in their lifestyle, in their in their environment. Do they have pain? What's the gut? Because as we now know, we need to restore the microbiota in order to restore cardiovascular system. So, examining all the constructs that play a role in the cardiovascular system is so important. And looking at the right test, don't settle for LDL. That's not good enough. We need to actually examine the subfactions, the genetic components. We need to actually really dig deeper into our labs so that we can really examine where we are at in our cardiovascular picture now rather than wait for it to happen in a decade's time.
It's such a big message, because having some sort of event, coronary artery event, you know, having a heart attack, having stents put in, having valve replacements, I mean, the conditions going on, are so invasive. They're so debilitating to our long-term health that we really want to get this wake-up call now and make those changes. Mm-hmm. For people who are listening, who are making choices that are stressing their system out, compromising the body's ability to function, you know, this is the message. It's like change. You know, don't create some chronic health condition that can lead to your demise, or seriously compromise your ability to live life. We need to really make these changes now. So we've talked about a lot of strategies, a lot of things to look at. I just want you to recap, Anita, what would you say would be the top, you know, let's just keep it simple. It's probably more than that. But let's say the key five strategies people need to incorporate into their life, whether they have heart issues, circulatory issues, cardiovascular issues, where they've already, you know, been affected, or for people who want to optimize their health and vitality, keep their, you know, cardiovascular system working in tip-top shape, what would you say they need to start doing?
Most importantly, if you do have a cardiovascular event, if you do have elevations in cholesterol, examine. Find the right markers to examine. And you're welcome to reach out to me and I can guide you. So diet plays the most important role. What you stick down your throat is so very important. Lifestyle plays another important role. If you do not exercise and don't move, don't rest and relax, don't sleep enough, all of those factors will play a role. Now, as far as nutrients are concerned, my top five go-to nutrients would be bergamot, glutathione because it activates ATP production, your tocotrienols, these are your vitamin E isoforms, coenzyme Q10, magnesium. I will incorporate resveratrol because it's really very powerful. It's found in red wines. It's really powerful as an antioxidant. Vitamin D. So many of us are vitamin D deficient. Your omega oils and your probiotics are so very important as well. And then because cardiovascular events are inflammatory, you'd want to use things like theracurcumin, for example. Now, a combination, and vitamin B3 is another very important one. A combination of these are often found in commercially available practitioner-only formulations that can be available as one item. So those nutrient constructs are very, very important in line with optimizing diet, lifestyle, exercise, meditation, and putting those right nutrients in. Your body is out of sync, and because it has, your labs have shown that they are, you have elevated cholesterols and elevated LDLs, so therefore put those nutrients back in to avoid the need for pharmaceutical medications which have side effects. These, if used correctly under the professional guidance of your health practitioner, you will find that they will play a vital role in regulating cardiovascular health without side effects.
You know, I would take all the literature to my mother's doctor, and I think when I was researching cholesterol as well, you shouldn't be put on a statin drug if you're over the age of 80. It can cause more harm because you need that cholesterol for making the hormones and your brain. He just refused to look at any of it. He would he would see me coming, and he'd, I could see his face already getting red with anger. How dare I dissuade my mother from her recommendations? But, you know, that is the message. We have to get this knowledge and be empowered to make the best choices for ourselves and our loved ones. We just can't go in unprepared and just accept what's being given. It could lead to some really adverse effects, and we don't want to go in that direction. We have to get empowered with this kind of knowledge. So, you know, you have been so diligent in your research, Vinita. You just dive so deep into these issues to help us understand what's really going on so we can make the best choices possible. And I'm so grateful for you and the work you do. I want people to go to your website and learn more. I know you do consult. I know you consult here in Australia. Do you consult overseas?
I consult online as a result of, consult worldwide because I teach internationally. So anywhere, reach out and you can reach out to me at my website, which is Vinita Dahia, VanitaDahia.com. And I will be, I also have what I've spoken about in a webinar, so you're welcome to have a peek at that as well.
Well, you just have such great knowledge, and it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm so grateful to you, Vinita, for all of the research you have done to bring this information to us. It's so essential now. So thank you so much for your wisdom today and your professional expertise. It's been great having you on the show. And I just really want to encourage everyone listening to do your research, get educated, learn what you need to do to optimize your health, to support your cardiovascular system, to reverse conditions, to make sure you never get them in the first place. All this is available for you if you're willing to learn and to grow and to really explore possibilities. So thank you for sharing all of your wisdom and knowledge with us today, Vinita. It's always great having these conversations with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Dr. Salmon.
You're so welcome. And to all of you listening, thank you again for joining me here on What Women Must Know. Come join me every week. And if you'd like to find these shows, go to my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, or just opt into my website, Dr. Cheryl Selman, to keep you empowered. And until next time, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.